Hello, and welcome to the Doorstops Podcast. I'm Dr. Cody Price, and I would like to introduce you all to my guests today, Bill Faith and Marcus Roth, both of whom are with the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio, also known as COHIO. Bill has served as COHIO's executive director since 1994. Bill is a well-known housing advocate at the state and national level, and has spent decades working on housing and homeless issues in Columbus and Washington, D.C. Bill has served as the chairman of the National Low Income Housing Coalition and was president of the board of directors for the National Coalition for the Homeless. Marcus joined COHIO as the communications and development director in 2015 after a decade of reporting for Gongwer News Service, where he covered the state legislature intensively. Prior to moving to Ohio, Marcus lived in Philadelphia, Virginia, New York City, and Spain, where he worked as a freelance journalist, photographer, and stonemason. So I want to thank you both for coming in today during the National Housing Week of Action.
Thanks for having us, Cody.
Thanks, Cody.
So, yeah, and also especially good timing now since it is the National Housing Week of Action. This is a time when advocates around the country really work to get more attention to housing issues. We have groups around the country and throughout Ohio that are organizing rallies, press events, meeting with local elected officials, and doing letter writing campaigns, voter registration drives, tweeting a lot, all those sorts of things to try to really bring the issue of homelessness and the shortage of affordable housing more to get some more attention to those issues. So appreciate you having us in now.
So kind of as a baseline, can you guys kind of tell us a little bit more about COHIO, some of the activities that you guys are involved with?
Well, COHIO is first and foremost an advocacy organization. We basically are pushing elected officials to try to do the right thing by people experiencing homelessness and people that are living on the edge that, you know, really don't have any access to safe, decent, affordable housing. So we work on the federal and the state levels to try to, you know, get the policymakers to do the right thing there. But we also have several other programs. We oversee the 80-county rural balance of state continuum of care, it's called, which is essentially the homeless system in the non-urban parts of Ohio. We do a lot of training and technical assistance for people that are working on the front lines and, you know, shelters and housing developments. And we also have a youth homelessness program trying to really get providers around the state to on board with the best ways to serve youth that are at risk and have a lot of different kinds of needs and priorities than the adult population. We have the SOAR program, which really helps to try to get SSI benefits for people that are experiencing homelessness and have disabilities. And we also have Fair and Affordable Housing program, do a lot of training, and they also oversee the housing information line. For your listeners living in Ohio, that is a good resource if you're having any kind of issues, you know, if it's a matter of landlords, you're facing eviction or any kind of, you know, problems, you know, with landlords, or even landlords are free to call as well. And it's if they, you know, want to know what the law is, how that pertains, what they have to do under the fair housing laws and landlord-tenant laws. The phone number, the hotline number right here, if you're interested, is 888-485-7999. Or you can email rentinfo@cohio.org. That's COHIO, COHIO.
Oh, thank you. And so, Bill, can you kind of give us a history of COHIO? Why did it start? Why did it really begin?
Well, COHIO was formed by a merger from two other organizations, but it really started with a lot of groups that got activated around the homeless problem. As homelessness really hit in the 80s, more and more groups formed to try to respond and build projects to serve homeless people. I could actually remember when homelessness wasn't really an issue. It's not something we experienced around Ohio. But in the 80s, that changed, and more groups got organized and tried to piece together projects to serve folks that were out on the streets. And as that group of that network of organizations started talking to each other and realized we got to do more about the housing side of this, you know, just setting up shelters or supportive housing or other projects for homeless people is, you know, wasn't going to get much better until we really dealt with the housing problem. And in Ohio, housing wasn't even considered to be a legit government function. You couldn't lend or borrow money for affordable housing. This was, you know, going back when OFA had very few programs that existed. So that required amending the state constitution. So we did that. We did a ballot issue to amend the state constitution. Housing was declared a public purpose. And that really brought together the homeless groups, along with a lot of groups that were more concerned about affordable housing. So after that campaign, where we won overwhelmingly, got that approved by the voters, that really brought together all those groups. And then we decided to form one umbrella organization to work on these issues from the advocacy standpoint on an ongoing basis. So that was how or why COHIO was formed, and not just to deal with the homeless problem by, you know, treating its symptoms, but to get at some of the root causes by attacking affordable housing problems as well.
No, that's great. Talking about the homelessness population, so what is the current state of homelessness in Ohio?
Well, we actually know a little bit more, quite a bit more about the picture of homelessness in Ohio, thanks in part to your agency, Cody. You guys have done a great job in putting together a report on that looks at the number of people that experience homelessness throughout each year, basically over the last 5 years. And before that, all we had was what's called the point in time count. That's the annual count when people, volunteers, go out and they try to essentially get a sort of a census of all the people that are experiencing homelessness on one point in time, one day in January. And counting homeless people is essentially kind of a difficult and a nearly impossible task if you're, you know, just by the nature of the problem. So basically what you guys have done, the new homeless reports that you guys are working on and have put out a couple at this point, look at all of the information based on the number of people that access homeless services at some point during the year. And I believe that's shelter, it's permanent supportive housing. So it encompasses like a variety of different populations. And so what we've seen is, and I know that not all of the, we don't have the complete picture, but from the definitely the best that we've had in ever in Ohio. And I think we're probably ahead of a lot of other states in doing this as well. It looks like in 2017, the most recent time that there's the most recent year for which there's data, there were over 70,000 people who needed homeless services at some point in the year. And that is an increase of 20% over 5 years. So we're seeing homelessness increasing. And we're also seeing kind of a changing demographic of homelessness over time. We're seeing that children's homelessness seems to be growing faster than the overall population. People 17 and younger, first of all, they comprise nearly a third of the entire population. It's somewhat surprising that they are such a huge component of the homeless population, because you don't normally think of kids as, you know, the ones that are homeless when you're, you know, walking around in the city and it's where it's a visible problem. So the children are about 21,000 homeless children in 2017, and that was an increase of 25%. And really kind of alarming is the fact that of that population, nearly 3,000 of them were babies, you know, infants under age one. And that population is really skyrocketing. We saw that increase by 53%. So that is, you know, what we know about the homeless population. And it's pretty alarming to think that things are getting worse in the overall homeless population, and particularly in, you know, when we're looking at children and families. So
do you think a lot of these increases in homelessness is related to a shortage of affordable housing?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there's definitely a direct line between people having a hard time paying rent and, you know, either getting evicted or having to leave their apartment for some other reason. But basically, housing affordability is just a huge and growing problem. Throw out some data from, again, from OFA, because you have a needs assessment, which every year looks at basically what kinds of housing needs there are out there. So it's a really good measure of what's going on. And so it looks like there's roughly half of all the renting households in Ohio are spending more than they can actually afford on rent. More than that 30% of incomes benchmark. And then 400,000 households, it's not even individuals, we're talking about households, are spending over half their income on rent. So when that you have that much money going just to keeping the roof over your head, then it doesn't really leave much else left over for all the other things you need to spend money on: transportation, food, childcare, healthcare, medicine. All those things really add up. So a lot of people are just really living on the edge, overstretched, and, you know, spending way too much just to even have a place to live. And when you're that stretched, you know, a lot of times, you know, something happens, you know, you have a medical bill, your kid, you know, has an accident, has to go to the hospital, and now all of a sudden you can't, you know, you basically can't afford to pay the rent anymore. So yeah, we see a direct line between housing affordability and homelessness. Just to throw out a few more data points, people need to earn, in Ohio, you need to earn $15.25 an hour to be able to afford a basic two-bedroom apartment. And the problem is there's only, of the 10 most common jobs in Ohio, only two of those jobs, registered nurses and customer sales reps, actually earn enough, more than that $15.25 an hour. Only two of the 10 most common jobs pay more than that on average. So you can see this is really kind of a structural problem in our economy. It's, you know, stagnant wage growth, particularly in the lower wage jobs, and rising rents are just over the past several decades of just rents have just really outstripped growth in wages.
What can we really do to address a lot of these issues? So what policies are happening at the state and federal levels that are aiming to address homelessness or affordable housing or a combination of the two?
Well, I think we have to put this into context. I mean, Marcus just talked about we have 21,000 homeless children every year in the state, you know, 3,000 babies. And these numbers are escalating, 53% increase in the babies. So we say as a state that we're concerned about the infant mortality problem. You know, we say we're concerned about children, vulnerable children. The governor's budget was supposed to feature lifting up vulnerable children, but they did nothing about these 21,000 kids that are homeless. They did nothing about the 3,000 babies that are homeless. And so we're missing an opportunity to do something. This isn't an insolvable problem. I mean, we saw very clearly that when we decided on a bipartisan basis to focus on eliminating homelessness among veterans, we were able to do that in large measure. You know, it's still out there, but the numbers have dramatically dropped because people coordinated their services better. People developed best practices on reaching homeless veterans and getting them to come inside to housing. And we put more money in it. You know, so we had bipartisan basis at the federal level, bipartisan basis at the state level. Let's put more money. Let's focus on serving homeless veterans. We did the same thing when it came to people that are chronically homeless, people that are out there all the time who have, you know, mental health issues or they have other disabilities. We said, let's get those people off the street and into permanent supportive housing. The Housing Finance Agency targeted resources in that direction for many years. Other groups around the state, the federal government, targeted resources to address that particular problem. And lo and behold, the problem dropped dramatically. And in fact, there's some communities that have declared a functional end of veterans homelessness or chronic homelessness. So we know best practice is already known. We know that coordinating services among those that could provide the housing and with those that can provide the assistance to address their other problems, that works. But it takes a little more resources, too. And that's what we're not doing when it comes to families. That's why the numbers are going up. That's why we're not getting at the fundamental problems of the lack of affordable housing. So just in terms of some things that are readily available for the state to do, one is the Housing Trust Fund. It's a great program that we've had at the state level and really with a permanent funding source since 2003, but it's not been increased in that entire time. That's the way the state pays for homeless assistance. That's also the way we help fund development projects, affordable housing development or preservation projects that the Housing Finance Agency does. It also is a way that we address other issues like home repair for seniors so they can continue to live in their home. But that money has not increased since 2003. In fact, it's dropped. In the early days, $70 million a year came in. But that, with the recession and other factors, that's dropped to $45 million a year. That's all we're putting in as a state to that issue. And then if you factor in the CPI or the value of that money, it's dropped, you know, another 40% in value. So this has been neglected in our state legislature and by our governor. Not this only this governor and the prior governor completely neglected this problem, and even the prior governor to him neglected this problem. So it's been bipartisan neglect of this housing need and the homeless need in our state. So there's a real simple thing that we could do right now. I mean, people may have heard about this temporary assistance for needy families program that comes from the federal government. It's supposed to be directed at families that need temporary assistance. Well, these homeless families, by definition, are in that category. So we had a proposal to use a little portion of that money to provide rapid rehousing assistance for those families that are on the brink of homelessness or have actually gone to a shelter, to get them out quickly. Because those little babies or a pregnant, you know, mom languishing in a shelter is a recipe for disaster. You know, think about infant mortality. I mean, people that it's a primary social determinant of health if people lack basic affordable housing. So we're not being smart about the way we're allocating our resources, and there's an opportunity for the state to change that. I do think the governor has a sincere desire to lift up vulnerable children and vulnerable families. I mean, there's evidence of it in other things that they've proposed in this budget, but they've missed the boat when it comes to housing and addressing the homeless problem. So let me just talk about a couple other policy issues that are brewing out there. We have to fight off bad policy as well as promote solutions. So there's a policy that got promoted just in this General Assembly that would actually increase property taxes on affordable housing developments. So this is a little complicated, but it has to do with the way those properties are evaluated. Affordable housing developments have long-term use restrictions. In other words, in order to get the public resource to build the affordable housing to start with, they have to agree to keep the rents low for 30 years. I mean, it's part of the covenant between the Housing Finance Agency and those owners of those properties. And that's how we achieve lower rents for the people to be able to have a better shot at affording to live there. What this bill would do, and Senate Bill 36, introduced by Matt Huffman, that bill would change that calculation to a market rate value on those properties. So that would dramatically increase the amount of property taxes they have to pay. And in some cases, those properties would be in a very precarious situation to be able to continue to operate because they don't have big operating margins in many of those properties. So at the same time, we try to promote solutions. We have to fight off bad ideas that come up in the legislative process. But we also need to remember that most of the resources that come to Ohio and to all of our states come from the federal government, and that's always been the case. So we have to pay attention to federal policy issues. The low-income housing tax credit program is just one example of resources that come to the states from the federal government. But, you know, in many cases, the folks that need assistance need rental assistance. That's a primary thing they could do. And there's lots of other programs, like the National Housing Trust Fund is a great resource that gets sent to the states to be administered to help address the affordable housing crisis. And we saw in the last budget go-around that the Trump administration proposed dramatic reductions in all of these programs. And the thing that was good about it is that even in the last Congress, when it was controlled by the Republicans, they rejected that budget proposal and restored funding for many of the critical programs that help address these issues. We need to not only do that to fight off the cuts, but we need to look at ways to expand these programs, particularly for rental assistance. It's the primary way that low-income people will have a better shot at being able to afford the housing on an ongoing basis. It's just basic rental assistance. So there's a number of efforts underway through the National Low-Income Housing Coalition and other groups to advocate for expansion of these critical federal programs. And that's something that we should all bug our members of Congress to do a better job at.
And so what does advocacy look like for Ohio and its partners? And how does advocacy actually work with you guys?
Well, advocacy is really just finding ways to get our perspective out there in terms of our public officials. And what we like the idea that seeing is believing, because I have seen so many times that for most politicians, they don't have a clue about homelessness or affordable housing. There are certainly exceptions to that. In fact, we have members of the Ohio legislature that have personal histories of homelessness now, which is a real interesting dynamic. But most of them, that's not something they ever dealt with in their work life or in their personal life. They don't know much about these programs. They don't know people that are homeless. They don't really see it that much. So we believe that, you know, seeing is believing. So get people out and show them what's going on in their community, and not just the need, but also projects that work. You know, show them how the value of good housing programs, and let them go tour. One of my favorite stories about this approach is taking elected officials out on tours is years ago, We were working on really the first major federal legislation to address homelessness. They called it the McKinney Act. And they were looking for Republican sponsors because they had some Democrats that were pushing the bill, but they needed more help on the Republican side of the aisle. And our congressman was Chalmers Wiley, kind of a leading Republican on one of the key committees. So we brought him out. We took him out to show him some of the homeless projects in Columbus. We're walking up the steps of one of the shelters, and he was ahead of me, and he stops midway up the step, and he calls out the guy's name that was coming down the step and said, "What are you doing here?" And the guy said, "Well, I live here. You know, what are you doing here?" And this turned out to be a friend of his that had worked for the prior governor, lost his job, went down in a downward spiral, got a divorce, a whole series of problems, ended up homeless. So this is a colleague of his who he knew personally for many years, and he just couldn't get over the fact that somebody he knew was homeless. Now, we didn't set this up. We didn't know this guy. You know, he was just another guy at the shelter, but they had a long conversation, and Chalmers Wiley went back and co-sponsored the bill. And every time I saw him for years after that, he'd always bring up his friend that he met that was homeless. And I think you can't replace that with any words from an advocate. The other thing I would say about how advocacy works is there are those of us that wander the halls of the State House all the time and talk to members, elected officials. And we could be somewhat effective, persuasive sometimes, but there's nothing like them hearing from people in their district, even people that don't really know that much about the issue. They may not be running any programs, but they just hear these numbers about 3,000 homeless babies and say, "That's an outrage. We should do better." And they call their state senator and say, "You need to do something about this," even if they're not sure what the best thing to do. Because if they hear from their constituents when they're out and about, it'll make our job as lobbyists around the State House much more effective.
One thing I'd say, too, I think a lot of people are kind of skeptical that actually calling your local representative is going to make a difference. You know, usually you'll probably get a voicemail, or you're, if you're lucky, you'll get an aide. They're not going to, you know, the congressman's not going to pick up the phone, of course. But these contacts actually do make a difference because the office tracks, you know, when they get these calls, they track what people are calling about, how many people called and expressed a position on something. And when something really rises, you know, or you're getting a lot of calls about the same issue, expressing a concern about the same kind of thing, you know, and or asking, for example, you know, like to support the amendment to expand the housing trust fund in the next state budget, then, you know, that sort of makes an impression. They realize that there's enough people, you know, it might be their aide telling them that, you know, "Well, we got like 12 calls this morning, you know, talking about the amendment for the housing trust fund." They go into a meeting that afternoon and the issue comes up and they know, they make the connection that, oh, you know, people in my district actually do care about this. So, you know, I think these contacts really do make a difference. And if they're not hearing from anybody about it, then that's the real problem, because, you know, it just goes into a black hole, and they need to hear from us, and they need to hear, you know, ideally from your listeners, Cody.
Yeah, thanks.
This is, you know, a great time to try out, you know, if you're new to advocacy, try it out and you know, put in a call to your local legislator. As the National Housing Week of Action, you know, certainly on the federal level, there's the FY 2020 budget moving through, you know, and we're trying to get some more funding for, as Bill mentioned, for rental assistance and homeless services. And also in the big one for us in Ohio is the Housing Trust Fund Amendment. And that is before the Ohio Senate. Hopefully by now it's going to be in the budget bill. But for that amendment to get into the budget and for it to stay in through the process, the senators really need to hear from their constituents. So you can go to our website, and right there on the homepage, you'll see a link that talks about the Ohio Housing Trust Fund. And you can click on that, find out how to contact your legislator, your senator, and you know, get your feet wet on this National Housing Day of Action. Also, you can go to www.ourhomes-ourvoices.org. That's for the Our Homes, Our Voices National Housing Week of Action. That's their website, and it lists a lot more information about events occurring in your area and, you know, how you can make a difference in Congress. So please do that. It's a great time, National Housing Week of Action.
Thanks. So after everything that we've kind of talked about today, what are some of the major takeaways that you wish that everyone would know?
Well, it's kind of a sad fact that we now accept mass homelessness as a matter of life in Ohio and across the country. I'm old, I guess, but I remember when that was not a fact that we accepted. We did not have mass homelessness. We certainly didn't have 20,000 homeless children in the state of Ohio every year, 3,000 babies. That's not a situation that we should tolerate, and we could change it. You know, the reality is we have proven that we could solve these problems. We've done it largely for homeless veterans. We've done it largely for people that have been chronically homeless. These are problems that we could solve. It does take better public policy, and it does take some additional resources. Just like any other problem we try to solve as a society, we need to apply the resources. And that's not like manna from heaven. It doesn't just come down on us. It happens because politicians decide they have to do something about it because they're hearing about it from their voters. And that's what I think the major takeaway is. We all have a role to play in that, to make the case that we should change these things. And I, frankly, I'm taking heart, you know, in this presidential campaign that's beginning to get fired up. Many of our candidates on the Democratic side of the aisle, at least, are proposing big programs, big, significant federal increases in housing resources. Now, I don't know if any of them will ever get elected. I don't know if any of them will ever get that policy through. But I've never seen a presidential campaign, even in a primary, where that many candidates, I mean, Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, Bernie Sanders, all these people are putting out significant proposals to increase affordable housing resources. And I've been around long enough to know that you don't win on just one side of the aisle. You really have to work on both sides of the aisle. We've won major federal legislation and state legislation before for affordable housing, but I've never been part of a victory on those issues without bipartisan support. So we need both sides of the aisle to participate in forging solutions to this that'll work. And I've seen it happen before. I think we could do it again.
One thing I'd add, too, is just the fact that housing is foundational. We know that access or having a safe, decent, affordable home is really essential for people to get healthy, to overcome, you know, mental illness or addiction, or even just to you know, recover from a broken leg or something. You need a decent place to live. And we also, you know, children doing their schoolwork, you know, you are going to be much more successful in school if you actually have a home where you can do your homework and you're not out on a street or in a shelter somewhere. You know, we know that kids that are homeless face a much higher risk of homelessness as they grow up, but it becomes a recurring cycle. We know that people experiencing homelessness are much more likely to get arrested and go to jail. And then we're spending, you know, as a society, we're spending money on jailing people, that, you know, which probably costs more than it does just to, you know, help them actually have access to a home. So if we address homelessness and we, you know, make sure that people have more access to affordable housing, we're also going to be dealing with a lot of other public policy issues that our society faces. So it's really like a leg up. If we tackle this foundational problem first, then our state is going to be able to make progress in a lot of other areas that are important to policymakers.
And so one kind of final question, what can or should people do in their daily lives to address homelessness, both really for policy and in their personal lives?
Well, everybody can participate in the policymaking process. I mean, vote, you know, elect people that care about these issues, that talk about these issues. Two, you know, speak up. I mean, you know, we've seen it in a variety of other areas, in the healthcare debate, you know, regular citizens speaking up about their issues, their needs. That makes a huge difference, just speaking up. And I think, you know, whatever you do in your daily life, be compassionate toward people that are struggling to make ends meet. You know, I think there's more and more people that realize with the cost of housing that homelessness could really happen to anybody. And I think more and more people who never thought they'd have to experience those kinds of struggles have been experiencing those kinds of struggles. More and more people doubled up. So I just think we need to be more compassionate in general. I think we're too much in our culture is a really hardening of the heart toward anybody that is struggling with personal issues that cause problems. I think we need to change that kind of culture. We have to be a more compassionate, caring community. And how you want to live that out in your response to people that are homeless is really a personal decision. I first got involved in these issues through a program at my church. You know, it was actually a soup kitchen. And that's what got me going on working on these issues. But people should just do whatever their heart moves them to do at a personal level to respond to this.
And finally, if you guys could have everybody read one book, what would it be and why?
Well, I know that a lot of your previous interviewees talked about Evicted, so I wasn't going to put that down, even though it was a great book and certainly illuminates a lot of the struggles that people are going through every day, you know, living on the edge of homelessness. So instead, I picked for this question, my response would be Suetonius's 12 Caesars, which is probably nobody else's offered this one. Suetonius is he lived in, I think, maybe the first century AD. He was a Roman, and it's, I know, kind of a strange choice, but I have a penchant for Roman history. And what amazes me about this book in particular is kind of short biographies of the first 12 Roman emperors, you know, starting with Julius Caesar through Caligula and Tiberius, some of the really like infamously awful leaders that we know through history. So, and what really fascinates me about this and then another Roman history that I've read is how similar a lot of those figures seem, how familiar they are in a lot of ways to what we're seeing now, but also it's also encouraging in a way to see that how far we've come, because things were so awful back then that, you know, it's also, it's nice to know that, like, as a society have progressed in a lot of ways. I mean, both those things, like the familiarity of what you read about when you're reading ancient Roman history and how similar things seem, but at the same time, like, the reassurance that, well, thank God we've come a long way since then. So that's what appeals to me about it.
Yeah, that's pretty obscure, Marcus. I mean, you know, I guess that's, you know, Marcus, now it makes sense. It sounds like it might be a Roman name. I'm sure you are the only person involved in this podcast that's ever heard of that book. But I don't know. The other one that got some popularity a while back is $2 a Day, Living on Almost Nothing in America, that Catherine Eden and Luke Schaefer collaborated on. That's a good book just to, you know, take a little stroll and a walk in somebody else's shoes, what it's like to be barely getting by and struggling with housing and all the other issues that happen for low-wage workers.
Oh, well, thank you guys so much for coming in and speaking to us. To my listeners, please be sure to rate, comment, and subscribe to the Doorsteps podcast so that you don't miss any updates about housing issues in Ohio. You can also follow the podcast and other research that the Office of Housing Policy at the Ohio Housing Finance Agency does by following our Twitter account at Ohio Doorsteps. Thanks for listening. I'm Dr. Cody Price, and this is Doorsteps.